support for the Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of the Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone and Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
Welcome to a special edition of the Projection Booth. I'm your host, Rob St. Mary, and with me, as always, co-host, Mr. Mike White.
Howdy, hey.
And on this special episode, we're talking about something very cool coming to the Detroit Institute of Arts. It's called Watch Me Move, the animation show. So, Mike, why don't you explain it just a little bit?
Well, in a nutshell, the Detroit Film Theater, they do, two, three different series a year. There's a fall, spring, and summer series. And the fall series this year, which really is kind of a misnomer because it's fall and winter, they are focusing on animation. So for October all the way till January, Detroit is going to be rife with animated shorts and feature films down at the Detroit Film Theater, which is right part of the Detroit Institute of Arts, which is down on Woodward Avenue. And really, I know this sounds kind of chauvinistic, but I think that the Detroit Institute of Arts is probably one of the best art institutes that I've ever been to, and I've been to several major ones, but I really enjoy what the DIA has to offer. And of course, I love what the DFT has to offer. Every season, they've got many, many films that I love to go check out on the big screen. And this year, I am right there with a whole series of animated stuff. They're concentrating on everything from the Fleischers, Warner Brothers, Pixar kind of stuff, avant-garde things, National Film Board of Canada, whole swath of animation, pretty much everything that you can think of throughout the decades.
And what's interesting is that it's not just them showing a calendar of films. There's also an exhibit that's in the DIA itself, and the films sort of accentuate the exhibit. So what I thought we would do is go to an interview we did recently with curator of the Detroit Film Theater at the DIA, Elliot Wilhelm. He'll explain the whole idea behind Watch Me Move, the animation show.
I'm Elliot Wilhelm. I'm curator of film at the DIA and director of the Detroit Film Theater since its inception, which was actually January of 1974. So we are just about to enter our 40th year, and January will be our 40th anniversary celebration.
Wow, got some good stuff planned up for that?
We do. We're keeping it under wraps at the moment, but we are planning something quite special for January, and actually we're going to be continuing the celebration during the entire calendar year of 2014, so we're all pretty excited.
Tell us about the animation. Why 2013 and why animation?
Animation is something that has been around for as long as motion pictures have been around, and that's getting on to 150 years now. And granted, that sounds like a long time, but it's a relatively young art form, the art of motion pictures. And we are fortunately able to present a show that was originally organized by the Barbican Museum in London. And this show has been traveling around the world, and we're delighted to be able to present it at the Detroit Institute of Arts. And it's a celebration of motion pictures in general, but very specifically the unique and beautiful art form of animation, which is bringing to life things that otherwise wouldn't be brought to life. Motion pictures that are not necessarily a photographic representation of real life. And very early on in the existence of motion pictures, people began drawing on film and photographing drawings and finding ways to create the illusion of motion. Motion pictures themselves are, of course, an illusion of motion. You're seeing a series of still photographs running at a relatively high rate of speed that create the illusion that something is actually moving in front of you. That is, of course, one of the great beneficiaries of the fact that the persistence of vision exists, and what that really is the fact that an image sticks on your retina for just a very small fraction of a second, and because of that, you are able to look at what is now a frame rate of, say, 24 frames per second, with a brief closing of a shutter in between those images, and you don't see the closing of the shutter. It doesn't really register in your brain. All you see is one picture following another picture and creating that illusion of motion. Artists very early on began using motion pictures for special effects purposes and trying to create other worlds and take us into places that were not necessarily realistic, but were representations of the world around them. And artists were also putting pen to paper and realizing early on that they could create characters, they could create shapes, they could create other worlds and the representations of other worlds in motion picture form. And that's something that has been attractive to audiences and kind of mind-expanding to audiences through the entire history of film. And what Watch Me Move does is to present that first century plus of animation in a somewhat compact form, so that when you enter the exhibition, you're able to see the earliest representations of motion on screen. And by the time you reach the end of the exhibition, you are seeing what we believe may be the future of animation. Although the way technology advances, there's no way to predict exactly what that's going to be, but the state of the art, shall we say. And along the way, more than 100 clips and full films that have been really icons of animation throughout that first century plus, and landmarks of animation that some people will recognize, some that people won't recognize, but a somewhat chronological journey through the art form with various stops along the way to explore all sorts of interesting experiments and all sorts of interesting discoveries and uses of animation. So it's time has come, and we're very, very delighted to be able to present the program.
It's a very expansive program from what I've seen. It runs October to January, and there's, you know, multiple stops each week. And I think what's really interesting is we get an opportunity to see all of these early pioneers that maybe either have been forgotten or people, you know, I mean, obviously it's not Pixar, so it's the early part of the show. So can you talk a bit about what we'll get from the first couple of pieces on the calendar?
Well, in terms of the exhibition itself, you'll be able to see early examples of animation by people like Georges Méliès, for example. Anyone who has seen Martin Scorsese's film Hugo knows something about the story of Georges Méliès and the discoveries that he made and what he described as, quote, artificially arranged scenes, unquote. The earliest motion pictures were really images from nature that the Lumière brothers filmed. And by that, I mean natural scenes, a train entering a station, parents feeding their baby, and so on. And those were wondrous to behold, for sure. But Georges Méliès decided that he could create worlds of his own, and he built sets and discovered that, for example, if you stop a film while you're photographing an actor, and then you move the actor out of the frame, and then you restart the camera, that what the audience appears to see is that actor disappearing. And based on some of those early discoveries, he was able to create motion and effects that couldn't exist in real life. And many of those are represented in the exhibition. And one of the things that we're really also very happy to be doing, and we think is one of the exciting additions to this exhibition, is to present in the Detroit Film Theater a series of 10 programs that represent different aspects of the art of animation and different periods of animation, different styles of animation, different uses of animation. These so-called rotating programs are going to run from the opening of the exhibition to the closing of the exhibition in January, and you'll be able to see them throughout. One of them is Pioneers of Animation, in which people like the Lumière brothers and Etienne Meret and Emile Cole and Georges Méliès will have their films represented in a more complete form than they are necessarily seen in the exhibition. the exhibition with more than 100 animated sequences in it is so full that you can't possibly see everything on a single visit. What these additional programs in the DFT allow people to do is to explore aspects of animation that while they're walking through the exhibition, they may be particularly struck by. For example, if somebody sees one of the remarkable Warner Brothers cartoons that happens to be in the exhibition called Duck Amuck, in which Daffy Duck creates these very surreal worlds around him and actually vanishes into the infinite cosmos of animation. It's an amazing piece of work. If you discover that Warner Brothers animation is something you are fantastically interested in, we have a special rotating program of Warner Brothers animation that's going to be taking place on a number of occasions in the DFT. If the works of the National Film Board of Canada, which has been a pioneer in giving animators free rein over the decades to create exceptional works, if those appeal to you, you can come back and see those. You can see a program of computer animation. If you are a nostalgic baby boomer, you can come back and see a program of early Saturday morning animation from TV when you were a kid. All of these things are represented in some aspect in the exhibition itself, and what we're able to do on the screen at the DFT during other times of the week is for people to expand their experience of Watch Me Move. We also think it's an exhibition that people are going to want to revisit, because each time you go through it, it is going to look different because there are so many pieces and examples of animation. The exhibition is actually a living thing in every sense. Each of the screens that exists in the show is alive. And the juxtaposition of those screens as you move yourself through the show allows you, in a sense, to create a different exhibition each time you go through it. And part of that is also by sheer chance, based on what's on the screen at any given moment as you proceed through the exhibition. So it's a living, breathing thing that we think people are going to want to revisit, which is one reason why we have one of the ticket levels for the program is going to be an all-access pass that allows you many, many visits to the exhibition itself and access to not just these rotating programs of the different aspects of animation that I was talking about, but also a lot of the feature animation that we're going to be showing on evenings at the Detroit Film Theater. A lot of classics, such as, Walt Disney's Dumbo, for example, a film that was highly influential on a lot of animators. Modern examples of animation like Waltz with Bashir, the Israeli film, The Iron Giant, directed by Brad Bird, Tim Burton's Frankenweenie. Tim Burton, of course, is represented in the show itself. So it's just kind of a mind-bending experience for people who love animation, for people who want to discover animation, and for people who simply love movies.
So one of the things that, when we talk about animation, it tends to be relegated to the realm of children. You've mentioned a few films already that definitely aren't kids' films. How are you going to try to kind of get the kids as well as the adults to attend this?
Well, we think it's a perfect exhibition for families. And we know that there are, based on our experience here at DFT running animated films for our entire 40 years, we know that adults are very, very interested in animated films, in good ones and in fascinating ones and in learning more about animation. There is a section of the exhibition which is not recommended for younger children, in fact. It deals with subject matter that's a little bit more adult, and we have a path that you can follow with youngsters that avoids that section if you don't want them to see that one area of the exhibition. But we think that in terms of bringing adults into the exhibition itself and to some of the sidebar events that we have, that is not going to be a problem. The advanced interest we've had in it, the interest we've had in animated films over the years, tells us that it's one of the most popular forms of film that we exhibit. In fact, every year when we run the Academy Award-nominated short films, Only one city, New York, draws more people to the Oscar-nominated shorts just prior to the Oscars than the Detroit Film Theater does. We have an average of 10,000 people every year. And while that program includes both the live-action shorts and the animated shorts, we know from our audience and from what they tell us and from their viewing patterns that it's the animated shorts that are the most exciting and the most exhilarating and the most interesting for them. So there is a huge appetite for animation on the part of adults.
The one thing I find interesting about this exhibition at the DIA is that it's not just a schedule of film that you're working on, but it's also a gallery presentation that people can go to. So it's sort of this immersive kind of two-part piece that people can go through. As for bringing it over from London to Detroit, what was sort of the logistics of what you had to work out in terms of, okay, we're going to put all this in the space, and then did you have to pick the stuff for the calendar, or did they sort of go, this goes with the exhibition?
Well, the things that we picked for the calendar to play in the DFT, those were all our decisions. Much of what is in the exhibition was placed there by the exhibition's original curator, Greg Kilty of the Barbican in London. And while we've rearranged physically some of those sections, simply because our space is different than the one that existed in London, the basic concept of the exhibition is the same. And it's a multi-sensory experience, allowing people to put together a lot of different ideas that animation has addressed over the last century or so, but that audiences may not realize the connections to. For example, there is an early film in the exhibition itself that is shown in its entirety called The Sinking of the Lusitania, which was made in around 1914 by Winsor McCay, who did the first animated dinosaur on film, Gertie the Dinosaur, and Gertie is also in the exhibition. But because there was no newsreel footage of the sinking of the Lusitania, what Winsor McCay decided to do was to do what in a sense was animated photojournalism, showing what it must have looked like, what it probably looked like, or an artist's conception of what the sinking of the Lusitania must have been. And this, of course, is not a comic item. This is not a cartoon. It is a kind of new journalism that he was experimenting with. The result, the film itself, is so stunning and so extraordinary. It reminds us in one sense that now there is a video camera trained on almost everything. But even if there weren't, there is room for interpretation of actual real-life news events. And Winsor McCay, in making The Sinking of the Lusitania, pioneered a whole new form of storytelling, a whole new form of reportage combined with artistry. And whether or not he knew he was doing this at the time, he did do it. Seeing it now is absolutely thrilling. And when you see it in the context of so many of the other things that are in the exhibition, I mentioned Winsor McCay's Gertie the Dinosaur. Well, you'll see Gertie juxtaposed next to a dinosaur by Willis O'Brien, who later on did King Kong, but earlier did The Lost World. It's stop-motion, sort of three-dimensional puppet animation. And you'll also see it juxtaposed with images from Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park. It's sort of our Dino Land section, because dinosaurs, since they don't exist any longer, have always been an exciting subject for animators. Animators love to present us with worlds that don't exist, although many of the things that are represented in the exhibition are things that do exist, but that are seen and interpreted in another way. So it's that ability to bring things to life that only exist in our imagination that's so exciting. And I think one of the other things that people will be able to put together as they go through the exhibition and see the connections between the various sections is the fact that the very first images that were created by human beings on the walls of caves are fantastic to consider, because you will see animals that have eight legs. Well, clearly the animals that were being depicted on those cave walls didn't have eight legs. Why did they have eight legs in the drawing? Because the artists who created them, in their very first attempts at recreating the world around them, wanted to tell us the story of what motion was like. And they were doing the best they could with the tools and imagination they had at the time to depict motion. People have been trying to do that since the very beginning of art, since the very beginning of humankind and human expression. And it's only in the late 19th century, when we had the technology to actually present moving pictures on a screen for audiences to observe. But the impulse has always been with us to recreate life, to interpret life, to depict life in a way that is impressionistic in a sense, and can be realistic as well. Used for so many different purposes, used for comic purposes, used for serious purposes, and used to explore new worlds and to bring different forms of art to life, literally, on screen. And that is why the animation show Watch Me Move is, in a sense, consciousness expanding. Because as you see these different examples of things and as you move through them yourself, it is a celebration of motion, a celebration of life, a celebration of ingenuity. And it makes you realize that everything around you is motion. When you look at your smartphone and you press the button and have an app do something, it's animation. Animation is everywhere. And this exhibition will help people to understand that and to see it in new ways in which they don't take it for granted, but see it as a very creative form of human endeavor, one that has been with us forever and one that has recently found new technological tools with which it can be expressed in fantastic ways.
Throughout the season, you also have a series of lectures that's going to be going on. Can you tell us a little bit about what we can expect from those?
Sure. We have really terrific people coming in to talk about different aspects of animation. I had mentioned earlier Warner Brothers Animation. We have one of the great fans and great authorities of Warner Brothers Animation, a film historian by the name of Jerry Beck, who is going to be coming here on October 19th to talk about how those great characters were created, how artists on the order of Chuck Jones, who is one of the most legendary animators of all time, was able to work his magic on characters like Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd and the Roadrunner. And outside of those specific characters, also there were a number of so-called standalone Warner Brothers cartoons that were truly marvelous. Shorts like I Love to Singa, about a little owl who wants to sing. It's kind of a parody of the jazz singer in a way, but truly moving and charming. And a film called One Froggy Evening, which is the only starring appearance by a frog by the name of Michigan J. Frog, and he's going to be in the show as well. So Jerry's going to be talking about Warner Brothers, of Iwerks, who is the first artist who drew Mickey Mouse for Walt Disney and went on to create many, many of his own characters like Flip the Frog. Leslie Iwerks is the granddaughter of the legendary Ub Iwerks, and Leslie Iwerks will be here to talk about her grandfather and to talk about the history of animation and the impact of computer animation and the influence of her grandfather's work. We will also have Steve Stanchfield from College of Creative Studies, who's an animator in his own right, and is going to be talking about the great days of East Coast animation, the Fleischers, Betty Boop, Out of the Inkwell. Those cartoons of the jazz age, in a sense, were really pioneering. They were very different from the West Coast films, the Disney output, which was marvelous, but was also, in a sense, less daring than the New York animation, which often featured characters of questionable sexuality and there were musical interludes that were considered daring at the time. People like Cab Calloway appeared in the films of the Fleischers, and these films are going to be discussed in a lecture called Out of the Inkwell, Out of the Vault by Steve Stanchfield. His lecture will be on November 30th. And we have a lecture on superheroes. Who doesn't love superheroes? And when you think of animation, there are so many superheroes. Every country, it seems, that produces animation produces superheroes in some way. And you look at characters like Superman, who was created on paper in the late 1930s, and by 1941 was animated actually by the Fleischers. The Batman cartoons that followed, and so many of the superhero cartoons that have always been with us, it seems, they'll be talking about creating superhero art. And so all of these talks are going to be fascinating, and we'll cover many of the different aspects of animation, because animation fans are very particular about the kinds of things that they go for.
You know, it's such a expansive calendar, as we were saying. It runs October to January. And if there are any on there that you feel that people who are coming out really need to see that might be overlooked, you know, that you might know Betty Boop, or you might know, you know, obviously know Bugs Bunny or things like that, or some of the newer stuff, you really want to highlight a couple that, you know, these are the ones you should be at the DFT to see, because you may not get a chance to see them again.
Well, I think that people will discover for themselves as they go through the exhibition the things that kind of catch their eye. But there certainly are in the rotating programs some things that I think are fascinating. One of the programs that's going to be running from October through December is a program called Post-War European Animation. These were relatively serious animators who were working behind what was then known as the Iron Curtain. And during the Cold War, a lot of animators from Eastern Europe were telling little parables on screen that were entertaining, often bleak, but nevertheless ingenious ways of criticizing the totalitarian regimes under which they lived, but getting those messages in under the radar without it being noticed by their superiors exactly what it was that they were doing. And many of these were Polish films, Czech films, Russian films, and this is a whole subcategory of animation that actually turned out some of the most beautiful and stunning work, much of which is not seen now because it's not considered politically relevant now. And we want to correct this by having a program of these films, and to make sure that people can see some of the extraordinary work that was done and the role that they served in criticizing the society around them. Very often in motion picture history in general, there has been a subversive element, in a sense, in societies in which open criticism either wasn't encouraged or was not received widely by audiences, in which that criticism had to be placed in the form of entertainment and disguised, but managed to get a message across. And this particular program of post-war European animation will indeed celebrate those artists, and that's something that I think people will really be able to respond to very, very powerfully. And one more plug I wanted to put in for the National Film Board of Canada program. This is a film organization that is supported by the nation of Canada and has been for many, many decades, and has supported many different kinds of filmmaking, but has always consistently supported the art of animation by making tools and resources and distribution available to brilliant Canadian animators who have had stories to tell that aren't necessarily cute cartoons. Some of them are funny, some of them are not, but have encouraged that kind of artistry and have encouraged it on a level of national support. Many of their films have gone on to become Academy Award nominees, Academy Award winners. some will be familiar to audiences, but many are not. And we thought it was only appropriate that it get its own section. Even though the NFB is represented in the exhibition, I felt that it was important that the NFB and its programming and its supportive animation have its own program within the DFT. So that is one that is going to be running from October through the end of December. I think it's going to be shown 6 times. And I am particularly pleased with that because I want people to see the breadth of work that that nation supports. And they don't support it to make a profit. They support it because they think that this is an art form that their country needs to support and encourage and allow to flourish.
Is there anything we should have asked about that we haven't?
Well, the main point that I want to get across is how entertaining this exhibition is and how entertaining all of the programs around it are. If I've made it sound overly serious and high-minded, I didn't really mean to do that, even though a good deal of the exhibition is, of course, serious and high-minded, and the different elements of many of the programs around it are. But the reason animation is still with us and the reason animated films are still so popular is that they're a joy to watch, and they are spectacular in the way they remind us of what movies can do. Sometimes in different eras of motion pictures, there can be a kind of homogenization of what popular entertainment is. A great animated film, whether it's a short or whether it's a feature, can remind you of the possibilities that motion pictures have to offer. Those possibilities are infinite. And one of the things that we think this exhibition does is to recharge people's batteries and refresh their imaginations and allow them to understand what motion pictures can do and to expect more from motion pictures and particularly from animation when they see an overview like this, a sampling of what the first 100 years or so of animation has brought us, the best of it, the most interesting aspects of it. And as they leave the exhibition, they will be seeing something brand new that was created just for our installation of Watch Me Move. And that will be something of a surprise to people. It will be an example of what's known as 3D mapping. Some people have seen this projected outdoors on buildings. Examples of it were seen during the recent D'Electricity show here in Detroit. But this will be a special passageway that takes you from the main portion of the exhibition out of the exhibition. And without spoiling the surprise, I can only tell you that it will be jaw-dropping and breathtaking in that it will surround people with moving images that are not confined to a screen and that, in a sense, do not know any borders. And will create an illusion that I think is going to make people want to come back and experience it again. It is what we believe to be one aspect of the future of animation that has not yet been explored fully. And it's going to be touched upon in a very meaningful way here as people reach the end of the Watch Me Move exhibition. And that is something that only exists in the Detroit installation. So we're very, very excited about that. And it is actually having its finishing touches placed on it as you and I speak today.
Elliot Wilhelm, you are pretty much synonymous with the Detroit Film Theater, but for folks outside of Detroit, your name has a little bit of a different meaning. Can you tell us how your name became a character in Be Cool?
Oh, my God.
And how it felt? How did it feel to be portrayed by Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
It was the most fun I've ever had when I wasn't here. That was something that actually has to do with the Detroit Film Theater and has to do with the generosity of the late Elmore Leonard, who I was very proud to call a friend. Back in 1998, Elmore was on our auxiliary board here at the Detroit Film Theater. And he helped us to raise money for the DFT. And we need to raise money. Our auxiliary, Friends of Detroit Film Theater, needs constantly to raise money. One of the things we did recently was to acquire a digital projection system, which if you are going to show movies after the beginning of 2014 that are distributed by any major studios at all, you need to have digital projection. And it's a hugely expensive proposition, putting in new seating, all of the things that we need to do. Our auxiliary helps us to raise money for. But anyway, back in 1998, Elmore Leonard was helping us at an evening in which people came and watched the Academy Awards, and we auctioned off various things to raise money. Elmore had a great habit of allowing someone to bid at different kinds of fundraisers that he thought were worthwhile, to bid in order to have your name used as a character in a future book of his. And it was generally a minor character, a judge or a policeman or somebody who would show up for one page maybe. But your name was in it, and that was a great thing. And I wanted it because I admired Elmore Leonard's work so much, and we both loved movies, and he came here to see films at the DFT. And so I bid on the right that night, and I was the high bidder. I won. So it was for a good cause, and I spoke with him, and he said to me, what would you think of being a slightly more important character in my next book, which was a sequel to Get Shorty called Be Cool. And I said, well, sure, that would be swell. And a knock on my door a few months later, and galleys of this book, and I looked at it, and sure enough, a character named Elliot Wilhelm is a 300-pound Samoan hitman. And I read about him, and I thought he was great. I loved him, and signed off and said, this is terrific. And a few years later, the movie version was made. And Elmore said, yes, I'll get you onto the set. You can watch it being shot. That would be fun because your character's going to have the same name. I ended up getting a call from a casting agency, and they allowed me to be an extra in the film. So I got to be in a bar scene early on in the film and sort of sit in the background. And the joke was that I was in a scene with Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, who was playing a character named Elliot Wilhelm. So both Elliots were in the shot at the same time. And it was incredible fun because I got to sit every night and watch a movie being shot, and in my scene was Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Vince Vaughn and John Travolta, and we all got to shoot the breeze over the 3 nights that I was on. And when I say 3 nights, I mean all night. The shoot started at about 4 p.m. and went until 6 a.m. So it was educational for me in that I got to see how an actual movie was shot and what it was like to be an extra, because I actually was an extra and was squared away with the extras when they weren't working, and we all ate together, and we all had the same complaints together about everything. And it was fun. It was an enormously fun experience. But that was it for my movie stardom, I'm afraid. It was a one-shot wonder. And you can see me in Be Cool, but I disappear after the first 20 minutes. You gotta really look carefully. I'm in 5 shots in the Viper Room early on in the movie.
Very cool. Well, few people can say that their name has been used not only in a book by a great author who sadly has passed on, but also in a film. So it's kind of a fun little story.
It was wonderful fun, but it also is to me more than anything else a reminder of the generosity and just unbelievable talent and the influence of Elmore Leonard, not just on this community, but certainly on the literary world and on the movie world. And I'm very, very happy for him that he got to live long enough to see 3 films that he really, really liked made out of his novels. And that was Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown, which was made from his Rum Punch, and Out of Sight and Get Shorty. And Elmore Leonard, I know, was very fond of all 3 of those movies. And the reason he and I got along was not just that I was a fan of his, but that he was a fan of movies and always was up for talking about movies. And he was extremely knowledgeable and had great, great taste in film. And it was just a delight and a pleasure to know him. And he was a great thing for our community and for the literary and movie world. We'll miss him.
That was our interview with Elliot Wilhelm, the director of the Detroit Film Theater, and little known fact, the guy who gave the Wilhelm sound effect its name.
I think he wishes that the Wilhelm was named after him. I mean, he was lucky enough to get, as he told us the great story at the end there about Elmore Leonard, winning a little auction to have his name in an Elmore Leonard book, and then to have have The Rock play a character based on that name, not on him, because he's not a 300-pound Samoan, as he's playing in the book. Elliot Wilhelm is a very nice man, but he is no 300-pound Samoan, and no, he is not The Rock. So, but it's still kind of interesting.
Yeah, the only person I get that plays my name is a skinny little white guy.
Yeah, that's right. Speaking of which, we have yet to do the Mike White interviews Mike White interview, which would just get confusing.
I still think that a print interview for that would be the best.
Yes, it would just be so confusing. But, you know, as for Watch Me Move, the animation show, looking at the schedule, I mean, there's some really cool stuff coming. And if you're anywhere near the Detroit area, you should look at the schedule for the Detroit Film Theater, which you'll find on our website, projection-booth.com, and also a link to the exhibit. And, you know, make it. If you're in Chicago, come on over. If you're in Cleveland, come on over. If you're in Toronto, come on over. I mean, whatever. I mean, just come on over to Detroit and check this out. And maybe you can coordinate it so that you can schedule it to see something really cool during the run of all the various films. Now, as for some that you're looking forward to, Mike, obviously you're much closer to Detroit than I am right now. What do you expect to go check out?
What won't I go see down there? I mean, really, I would like to check out as much as I possibly can. Of course, I'm a huge Warner Brothers fan, so I definitely want to see the attend the lecture about the Warner Brothers superstars, and then, of course, the Warner Brothers block. I'm also a big fan of avant-garde animation, so I'm looking forward to that. And then the Betty Boop program. I went to a Betty Boop program that they had, I believe that was just last year. And actually, Betty Boop is kind of a misnomer. That was all Betty Boop. But this Fleischer program will, I believe, go beyond Betty Boop, but she'll probably be a star of it. So I'm really looking forward to that. Those always kind of push the envelope, and we're just kind of muy loco, as they say, south of the border.
Well, the thing that's interesting about the Fleischers, and Elliot talked a little bit about the difference between what Disney and Ub Iwerks were doing out on the West Coast and then also what the Fleischers were doing on the East Coast, is that there doesn't seem to be this difference or cultural sort of divide in a way when you talk about the Fleischer's stuff, because in the 1930s he was putting people, as Elliot said, like Cab Calloway into his films. He would have, you know, multi-ethnicities, kind of things like that, and that was very rare when you consider, you know, this was a time when, you know, Jim Crow was still in effect in large parts of the country. A lot of, you know, heavy sort of racism and cultural exclusion in that way. And Max Fleischer's cartoons usually, you know, had broad range of stuff in there that other places just weren't doing.
Yeah, and they really just kind of played with the medium a lot, which I enjoy. And then I especially liked what they did with the Superman cartoons and that kind of early rotoscoping and just how absolutely gorgeous those were in this kind of like animated film noir, which I think really kind of lent itself to what is currently going on as far as, or maybe it's not going on anymore. It's been a while since I've checked it out. But the Batman and Superman animated series that come out of Warner Brothers now, where it just really seems to kind of embrace the darkness and play with light and shadow a lot more than a lot of cartoons I've seen.
As for myself, if I could make it out there, I would definitely check out a lot of as what you were talking about. And then also really interested in this sort of like European, Eastern European animation, because that's obviously something I have no knowledge of. And we've talked a lot about, you know, Eastern European Iron Curtain film, that kind of stuff, you know, things like Dusan Bayev and Milos Forman were doing Under the Iron Curtain, but to have animation kind of sounds fascinating as well. The one that is on the schedule, and it's in November, that I would say folks should go check out, that I absolutely loved, and it showed at the DFT back in, I think it was 2009, is one called A Town Called Panic. And I guess they were little shorts that were from Belgium originally, and then they did a full feature, and it's one of the most nutso animated features you'll see. It's all stop motion, and it's an Indian, a horse, and a cowboy, and they're basically little kids' toys, and they're kind of crudely animated, just kind of, you know, tilted back and forth and stuff like that. And it's all subtitled, but that adds to it in some way, I think, that makes it interesting. And one of the voices, I believe, and I think it may be the Indian or the cowboy, is Benoit from Man Bites Dog. So if you have an interest in Man Bites Dog, and therefore Belgian film, which is probably the only Belgian film I can think of off the top of my head, Town Called Panic is worth your time.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward. I missed Waltz with Bashir years ago when it played. I believe I had a chance to see it at the Toronto Film Festival and did not. So I've been looking forward to seeing that for a long time. And now that I have an opportunity to see that on the big screen, I'm definitely going to embrace that. And that is right at the tail end of December this year. So like I said, this stretches for months. Every weekend there are several programs. If you miss one, you can go back the next weekend and see it. Most of the time there are one-off kind of stuff, like The Iron Giant, I believe, only plays once. But, you know, obviously that's one that really didn't get very much commercial success when it came out, when it was at the theaters, but kind of has found a life of its own on video. And being able to see that one again on the big screen, it's like, yeah, I definitely want to do that. I mean, that's maybe one of my favorite Vin Diesel movies. Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe, because I love them all.
You know what's funny is we're not even talking about action films today, and we've brought up The Rock and Vin Diesel in this episode. What the hell is going on?
It's like the Fast and the Furious 6 has invaded the projection booth today.
That's crazy. I never thought that I'd be talking about The Rock or Vin Diesel, let alone both in one episode.
And that it's ostensibly about cartoons is even better.
Well, you can tell we've kind of gone off the rails here. But before we totally go off the rails, I would say go to the website, projection-booth.com. You'll find links to the complete calendar for Watch Me Move, the animation show, all the various films that'll be showing at the DFT. And you'll also find a link for the exhibit. Now, the exhibit is different. So you can just go to the exhibit and see that and all the various things. And then when you're at the exhibit, go, hey, here are the various movies that may tie into a certain part of the exhibit that I really like. So it's kind of interesting how this is the exhibit and the film theater kind of talking back and forth to each other.
And that's an actual art exhibit, like a kind of walkthrough kind of thing, not exhibit the guy who was pimping out your ride.
That's true.
All right. So thank you again to Mr. Wilhelm for taking the time to talk to us today. And definitely, if you're in the Detroit, Windsor, Toledo, Ohio kind of area, wherever, come on out for this series. See as much as you possibly can, because it is definitely going to be worth your time, worth your money. And like Rob said, all the links are going to be over at projection-booth.com. And thank you for listening.
Here's just a rebound mid-need the moocher. She was a red hot hoochie coocher. She was the roughest, toughest rail. Minnie had a heart as big as a whale. Hoodie ho, de ho.
Hoodie ho, de ho.
Hoodie ho, de ho. Hoodie
ho, de ho.
Hee dee hee dee hee.
Hee dee hee dee hee.
Hoodie ho, de ho.
Hoodie ho.
She messed around with a bloke named Smokey. She loved him though he was cokey. He took her down to Chinatown. He showed her how to kick the gong around.
Showed her how to kick the gong around. Arre,
arre, arre, arre, arre, arre, arre, arre. He gave his townhouse and his racing horses. Each meal she ate was a dozen courses. She had a million dollars worth of nickels and dimes. She sat around and counted them all a million times. D-ho, D-ho.
Fighting stock. Might I inquire to ask him, what's up, Doc?
I'm going to kill the wabbit.
almighty hunter, 'twill be quite a task. How will you do it, might I inquire to ask?
I will do it with my spear and magic helmet.
Your spear and magic helmet?
Spear and magic helmet.
Magic helmet?
Magic helmet.
Magic helmet.
Yes, magic helmet. And I'll give you a sample. That was the wabbit. What have I done? I've killed the rabbit. Poor little bunny. Poor little rabbit.
Did you expect in an opera? A happy ending?